right. Now, let's welcome our guest, Ernest Hoving from the Penn State Animal Diagnostic Lab. Mr. Hoving, welcome.
Good morning. Now, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Mr. or Doctor or what are you?
Technically it's Doctor, and really it's Doctor, because I'm a veterinarian and I have a PhD.
Man.
but Ernest works fine.
Doctor.
I like it.
That was
Double
a song. Doctor. What was that song?
Give me the news.
Yeah, whatever that tune was. Now, I've been after you, not you in particular, but our friend Chuck Gill, who is an old acquaintance of ours, helps us to, you know, get some guests and so on.
Oh, that jerk.
Now, stop that. Ages ago, I said, I'm hearing about this bird flu thing. Bird flu. We've got to have a guest on bird flu, because I do remember COVID from 5 years ago and how it kind of popped out of nowhere. And I'm thinking, oh, Lord, tell me we're not going to go through that again. So we welcome you for coming in. First off, tell us something, if you would, tell us something about yourself. What's your background? You know, what do you do at Penn State and so on?
Yeah, so I'm a veterinarian. I've been in practice. I graduated as a veterinarian a long, long time ago, back in 1990. And I was in private practice for a while as a veterinarian, and then I decided to go back to school, do some additional training, and then I was on faculty at the veterinary school in Virginia, at Virginia Tech, and then I came up here about 20 years ago to join the Penn State Vet and Biomedical Sciences folks. And so I've been here working as an extension veterinarian, so I work with the dairy industry pretty extensively in my day-to-day life. And then I also do some teaching and some research. And then just recently I became the director of the Animal Diagnostic Lab here on campus. And so that's what I'm currently doing. That's the main thing I do. But I'm still in touch with the dairy industry quite a bit. And we work with the Department of Agriculture fairly extensively as well as a diagnostic lab as well. So.
Now, there are different kinds of veterinarians, right? It's not like you look at any animal anywhere. Right.
Well, when you graduate, you're allowed to practice on any animal out there. Anything that lives and moves, you can practice on it. So there's a big debate about limited licensure, right? So should veterinarians just work on small animals after they graduate, or just on large animals, or just on horses? But currently, when you graduate as a veterinarian, you're theoretically trained to work on any species out there. So you can work on turtles, you can work on pigs, you can work on horses, you can work on dogs, cats, ferrets, guinea pigs, birds, anything out there really at all. So
rhinoceros?
Yes, if you dare.
Now, when you went to veterinarians, like, did you envision at all this being a career path, or talk a little bit about how you kind of matriculated down this path?
Yeah, so one of the talks that I give, especially to students here on campus, is never say never, because if you had asked me when I graduated as a veterinarian, would I be sitting here 20 or 35 years later, I would have said no way. But I've learned to never say never, and so just circumstances happened, and that would take another very long segment to go through all of that. But I ended up here, and I'm very happy with what I'm doing. And again, as a veterinarian, you have so many different options, not only in terms of species, but you can do food safety stuff, you can do public health stuff, you can work on a lot of different areas as well. So, had I predicted this? No, absolutely not. But I really enjoyed what I've done to date.
One of the things that I find fascinating is just the differences in technology, like just in our business. I mean, when I first started, we're splicing tapes together. Which is just ridiculous. You can't even explain it to kids today what that process was. How drastically different is the technology that you're using, and even just for the diagnostics part of it?
So I was just speaking with one of my colleagues the other day about radiology, x-rays, and back in the day when I graduated, you had to take an x-ray, then you had to develop it in the different liquids, the different baths, and that was a whole process, and now it's all digital. And so you take your digital radiology machine and you stick it there, take a picture. If you don't like it, 2 seconds later, you can take another one. You can take another one 2 seconds later. And so that's just one example of some technology that's really changed. But there's lots of other stuff in terms of testing as well that has been developed over the years in terms of better testing, faster testing, new things we can test for. So there's a lot of changes in technology that have affected veterinary medicine as well.
Now, you're in charge of the Animal Diagnostic Lab. What is that?
So there's three labs across the state that are part of the Pennsylvania Animal Diagnostic Lab system. So we work together, but each lab is relatively similar in what we do. And we're here, we're funded through the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture as well as some other sources. We have a bit of USDA funding as well. And our goal and our mission is to serve agricultural production animals in Pennsylvania and their owners and the veterinarians, obviously. And so ultimately the goal is to make sure we have a plentiful food supply and a safe food supply, but we also want to make sure our animals are healthy in that process, that they can be profitable for the farmers. And if veterinarians are having problems figuring out what's going on in a herd or in a flock, they can send samples to us to test them. So that's a lot of the stuff that we do. We're also involved with the Pennsylvania Egg Quality Assurance Program. So I don't know if you're aware, but all the eggs that are in the store shelves, although they're getting expensive, they have been, the farms that they come from have been tested for salmonella. And so we're very comfortable that those farms do not have salmonella, and they're on a regular testing program. So a lot of those samples come to us for testing, and so we're regularly testing those. So the next time you have some eggs for breakfast, think about the Animal Diagnostic Lab as playing a role in making sure that stays healthy and safe for you.
Okay. So the chicken at the Jordan Center was safe yesterday.
I feel pretty comfortable that it was. Yes.
Okay. Not the pretzels and nachos, but at least the
we'll
chicken.
Never know. We'll okay. never know.
All right. Let's talk about this bird flu. Now, I remember, I think a while back, whenever we heard bird flu, we kind of snickered or giggled.
Right.
I get the feeling this isn't a snicker or giggle thing anymore. First of all, what is this?
Right.
What is it?
Yeah, so it's avian influenza. That's the virus. It's caused by a virus, and it's really nothing new in one sense. So avian influenza has been around affecting birds for decades and decades and decades, and we've had outbreaks of that in our poultry flocks here in Pennsylvania before. So that's really nothing new. The wild birds out there are a reservoir for this virus, so they tend to not be affected by it, but they'll fly over here in Pennsylvania when they're migrating. And that's one of the big concerns, because then they bring with them the virus. And so they can be shedding the virus and dropping that wherever they stop, or even as they're flying, they can drop that virus in different places in their feces. And so, again, that's not a new thing, but what has happened a couple of years ago, every once in a while this happens, the virus became extra deadly to chickens, right? So it somehow mutated in the wild birds, and these viruses reassort all the time, just like human viruses do, right? If you get vaccinated 2 years ago for the influenza virus, the human influenza viruses, the reason they say you need to be vaccinated again is because those viruses change. They change all the time, right? So the ones you see 2 years ago are not the same ones you're seeing right now. And it's the same on the bird side of things. And so starting in 2022, there seemed to be a new strain of this highly pathogenic, which means deadly, influenza virus in the wild birds that was causing chickens to become affected, right? So you'd have a bunch of chickens out on pasture there. They might get exposed to the wild birds, and then they could come down with this virus. So that happened in Pennsylvania. We haven't seen nearly as many cases of that. That's been under control fairly well now, although other parts of the country are still dealing with that as well. But kind of the new spin on this is that avian influenza viruses have not really been found in cows before. Okay, so there's lots of mammals that can become affected by these avian influenza viruses, but for whatever reason, the viruses that were out there did not seem to grow well and adapt to dairy cows. So they've done a lot of genetic testing, and talking about new technology, that's something that's also really come on stream a lot. They can kind of pinpoint back in Texas at the beginning of this year, maybe late last year, there was a mutation in this virus that made it so that cows could become infected with its virus. And so, again, all the genetic tracing says this happens in Texas somewhere at the beginning of the year, something like that. And then once it got into that herd of dairy cows in Texas, it spread amongst herds. And so now what we have is this avian influenza or this bird flu in dairy cattle. And so that's kind of what's a different spin on it this time and what we're dealing with. And so what's happened then is before it was recognized, and even after it was recognized, it started spreading between herds. So if you would take a cow that had this, just like if you would take a kid from a daycare that was sick and take it to a different daycare, hey, all of a sudden you've got this new daycare affected with this this virus. Well, the same thing happened with dairy cows. You would take a dairy cow and take her on a ride up to Michigan, and now all of a sudden we had a herd in Michigan that was affected. And then they infected their neighbors, and they infected their neighbors. And so it spread across quite a few different states that way. And that's still, that's the kind of the biggest news. Although one of the things that's also happening is that some of these dairy herds that have the virus can now infect a poultry herd again. So if you have somebody who's working on the dairy farm and they go and take care of the chickens after they've just milked the cows, they can take that virus over to the birds and the birds then get infected. So it's kind of a wild birds to dairy cows, and then it can go back to chickens now as well.
What is, you said we have a pretty good handle here in Pennsylvania. What is it? And a related question, I think related, although you can tell me if I'm off. But when I'm at the grocery store, yeah, I'm always fascinated by all of the different labels. And the the one with the chickens, it's antibiotic free. No antibiotics used. I'm like, well, in my dumb mind, it's like, well, then it's more likely the chicken was sick. Right. Like, I don't want to eat the sick chicken. I want. Can you just what? How are we addressing this? And I'm just curious on the labeling, the importance of that or not importance of that.
So that's a great question. But just like in people, if we are infected with a virus, we generally should not be put on antibiotics because it's a virus and antibiotics don't work against viruses. And so that no antibiotics ever label doesn't really deal with the avian influenza because we can't treat it with that. And the reality is once it gets into a flock of chickens or turkeys, a lot of them end up dying. A vast majority of those will end up dying just because it's so pathogenic or so deadly to them. And so we actually, well, not we, but the Department of Agriculture actually ends up putting those flocks down because they recognize they're going to die anyway. So it's the control is really preventing the infection from getting into the bird flocks in the first place. And that's what we really try and focus on. And my colleagues at Penn State, I work more with the dairy industry, but they work with the poultry industry, and harping again and again and again, make sure that you know who's coming onto the farm, make sure they haven't been on another farm recently without taking proper precautions and things like that. So that's really the prevention side on the bird side of things. Now, we still do see some, and there's actually samples coming in every once in a while to our lab and other labs for testing because we still have those wild birds flying overhead, remember? Yeah. And so we get a backyard flock that's affected every once in a while, and you know that's kind of an ongoing thing, but at a very low level. So that's what I mean, we're in a good situation right now. California's in a very different situation. They've had lots and lots and lots and lots of birds affected, and most of that, or a lot of that, is coming from the dairy farms that are affected out in California.
We'll take a break here in just a moment. Yeah, I see these stories every now and then. Chickens have been infected and the whole flock has to be culled or killed.
Right.
I'm thinking, man, if I'm the chicken farmer, there goes all my chickens.
Right.
What? I mean, that's the only way to deal with this?
Yeah. So there's two parts to that. Yes, realizing that this is what we call highly pathogenic, a lot of those birds are going to die anyway if they get infected.
Yeah.
And so that's why they do it. It's only as much of a humane perspective as anything, that if rather than having those chickens suffer for a while and then having them die on their own, humanely putting them down actually makes more sense. It also helps with disease control, but that's a kind of a another facet of that. So, yes.
What happens to the farmer real quick? Is he out of business?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. It definitely has an impact on the farmers. I mean, just seeing your whole livelihood kind of go out the door or die is pretty tough. But the USDA does have what they call an indemnification program, and so they provide support for farmers that lose all of their chickens, and they pay them on a per-chicken basis, kind of a market value for that. And there's other support as well to help with cleaning up the premises and allow them to restock eventually. So there is support definitely that way, especially from the USDA, although the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture has also stepped up to help out in those situations.
All right, let's take a break right here. Again, our guest is Dr. Ernest Hoving. You've got to find that tune.
Yeah, yeah.
From the Penn State Animal Diagnostic Lab. Now, when we come back, how about people? Because I'm seeing stories about people now. Doctor, this is where I get nervous. And I had a glass of milk for breakfast this morning. I'm thinking, oh, wonderful.
I had a little eggnog to get my day started.
And birds flying overhead. Folks, don't go berserk, okay? Just sit tight. We'll come back with more of the program after this.
WeatherBell.com Vitality Foxcast remaining unseasonably mild today with some sunshine returning. A high temperature 58. Partly cloudy and colder tonight, low 30.
Fox Forecast.
Tomorrow will cloud up, the high 45. We'll get some rain tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow night, and early Wednesday. Our New Year's Day high 41, and then very cold air is going to come pouring in.
Update your home's furniture for the new year with the FlexSteel New Year New Room Sale. Going on now for a limited time at Kleine's Home Furnishings, Route 150 between Woolrich and Avis. The new year is the perfect time to refresh your home with all new furniture. And during the FlexSteel New Year New Room Sale, you'll enjoy savings on all FlexSteel furniture, including upholstered, bedroom, dining, home office, and occasional pieces. Take advantage of fashionable designs, extreme savings, and the unmatched quality and comfort of FlexSteel's Lifetime Warranty Blue Steel Spring. Hurry in today for unbelievable savings during FlexSteel's New Year New Room Sale. Going on for a limited time at Kleine's Home Furnishings, Route 150 between Woolrich and Avis. Online at kleinesfurniture.com.
It's just like coming home to Kleine's. It's just like coming home.
Let Bob and Kyle Miller and the rest of the team at Miller Brothers Auto in Mill Hall help you find the right vehicle or service to meet your exact needs. Miller Brothers Auto has quality pre-owned trucks, SUVs, and sedans. Check out their inventory at MillerBrothersAuto.com or on Facebook. If you're a classic car lover, Miller Brothers has a good selection of classic cars and trucks. Not only does Miller Brothers Auto sell cars, trucks, and classics, they buy them too. The highly skilled technicians in the service department offer you the best service for your vehicle every day and classic and antique vehicle service. In the body shop, Miller Brothers has current diagnostic and repair equipment to get your vehicle back on the road and is a direct repair shop for State Farm and Erie Insurance. Ask them about more car rentals, vehicle rental service. Miller Brothers Auto is a family-owned business and your Bobcat dealer, too. From compact tractors, zero-turn mowers, and UTVs, Miller Brothers has a quality selection to help you get the big jobs done. For service or rental information, call 570-726-3107. Miller Brothers Auto, 1 South Water Street, Mill Hall. Open Monday through Friday, 8 till 6, Saturdays, 9 till 2.
Families are gathering for the holidays, and it's no different at your elite Kubota dealer, Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. The Wallizer family has been happily providing sales and service for Kubota owners for a generation. Whether it's landscaping, yard care, construction, work around the homestead, or general hauling and winter cleanup, the Kubota family can do it all. And so can Carl, KW, Cindy, Misty, Kevin, Michael, Kyra, Wyatt, Hayden, and the rest of the Wallizer family and their friends at Daughter Equipment Sales and Service. Get easy financing with your good credit. Can't decide what to buy? A Daughter Equipment gift certificate works great. Merry Christmas and happy holidays from the hometown guys, your Kubota elite dealer, Daughter Equipment. Let the other guys talk the talk. At Daughter Equipment, we walk the walk in price and service. Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64 and online at daughterequipment.com.
The Center Hall Farm Store is ready to meet all of your feed needs. Whether you're feeding livestock, pets, wildlife, or birds, stop in and let the Center Hall Farm Store provide the best food options for the animals in your life. And with winter coming, now is the time to stock up on wood pellets from the Center Hall Farm Store. Check them out in person at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall or online at centerhallfarmstore.com. That's centerhallfarmstore.com. 110 Allison Street in Center Hall.
Whether you're buying or selling a house or real estate in our area, you need an advocate with experience, knowledge, and expertise. You need proud Penn State alum Sarah Schroeder, realtor with Kissinger, Bigatelle, and Brower Realtors. Call Sarah at 814-234-4000, extension 3146, or contact her directly at 814-470-0060. Don't get taken down by the housing market competition. Score big and let Sarah Schroeder go to the mat to get the best deal for you.
It's Let's Talk here on a Monday. Jeff and Scott with you. We'll have Joe Bastardi, weatherbell.com. Even when he's under the weather, he's on top of the weather, and he'll join us for the final segment and preview this windy week ahead here in the Valley of Happiness.
We'll ask him if he has bird flu or something.
Well, maybe not.
Again, our guest is Dr. Ernest Hoving from the Penn State Animal Diagnostic Lab. All this talk, we're starting to hear more about bird flu. Now, we were joking during the break. We're going to have people freaking out, going outside looking for dive-bombing birds. They don't have to do that, right?
Correct. There's okay, been birds right. flying overhead with this avian influenza virus for decades and decades and decades. And so there have been some cases reported in farm workers where they've been working with birds that have the disease, and they're working on putting them down, for example, like we were talking about earlier. And a few of those folks have gotten mildly red eyes, a very mild disease that was kind of self-limiting. And so those are the only folks that have been infected on the poultry side. On the dairy side, it's kind of the same thing. There's been a bunch of people that are milking cows, working closely with cows, that have, again, had the kind of the same thing, the red eyes, very mild, mild disease. Recently in the news, there's been a couple of cases where they found it in people that haven't worked, as far as they know, or had direct contact with birds or cows. And I'm not sure exactly if they figured out where they came from. Often once they start tracing those back, they can often trace them back to a source like that. Or maybe it's just that they're looking for it and they haven't looked for it before. But again, all the message out there is that things are fine for people that are, if you're working directly with poultry or dairy cows that have the disease, yes, I think we certainly need to take some precautions. But other than that, from a food safety perspective and from just a general public's concern, there shouldn't be any concern for our health from this avian influenza.
But you mentioned earlier mutations. And, I mean, I remember COVID. It was like every few months, okay, new version, up, new version. Oh, look, there's another new version.
Right.
Should we assume that's what's going to happen with this thing?
Well, and that's the concern, right? So that's what CDC says. Is this potentially going to become the next COVID, right? And I don't think there's any evidence that it is going to, just because it's jumped from birds to being able to affect cows. Yeah, that is now a mammal, but there's no indication that it's necessarily going to jump to people any more likely than any other virus might cause problems in people. So I think, you know, theoretically there's a concern, but theoretically there's a concern that we could end up with another COVID virus, coronavirus, that does the same thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there doesn't seem to be any evidence that that's...
So do we have any idea where this thing started?
Well, so in general, like I said, the wild birds are the ones carrying this virus, right? And so then they go up north, they mix with other birds from different flyways, you know, they have their parties up there. This virus might change a little bit because avian influenza viruses, human influenza viruses like to change. And then they come back down and then they spread that, right? So that's how it happens on the bird side of things. Again, on the dairy side of things, it really looks like there was maybe one flock of birds that carried some weird mutation that could now affect dairy cows in Texas. But there's been no evidence that there's any wildlife becoming affected with this same strain that's affecting dairy cows, for example. And there's no evidence that the wild birds are becoming affected with it either. That is a big concern. And so USDA Wildlife Services has done lots and lots of surveillance on these farms that are affected and around farms that are affected, dairy farms, that is. And they haven't found this in the wildlife or in the wild birds. as well. So I guess I just want to make clear as well, we don't have this in Pennsylvania, this dairy version of this influenza. We've been spared that, so that's great. Ohio had a case very early on, but they were able to limit to that one herd, and so they effectively controlled it. North Carolina had one case. They effectively controlled it as well. But right now, California has been kind of the hotbed. Thankfully, they're as far away from us as you can get, pretty much. But again, for their industry, it's been a huge issue because these dairy cows do get sick. And so there is quite a bit of time spent taking care of sick cows, just like if you're laying in bed with the flu, you get extra fluids, you might get some aspirin, you might get something like that, right? So that's really what it is, supportive care for these cows. Back to our discussion about antibiotics later, we don't give them antibiotics because, again, it's a viral infection and it doesn't help with that. So one of the things we've done recently here, the Department of Agriculture has implemented a milk testing program. And this is just to be sure. We don't think we have it, right? There's been no evidence that it's here. And like I said, the herds tend to get sick. So veterinarians would eventually report this and say, hey, there's something not right with this herd. But we haven't seen any of that over the course of this whole year. And we've had movement restrictions in place. So cows coming into Pennsylvania have to be tested before they're allowed to come here. So that's a good way to try and prevent this. And then more recently, the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture and also the USDA now is working on ramping this up nationally, has put in a testing program where we are collecting milk samples from basically every dairy herd in the state and testing it just to be sure that there's nothing there. And so that's what we're currently working on, and we'll get some samples very likely in the lab today as part of that testing program. So,
and this happens, like, every day at your lab?
So, yeah, they have to get us typically Mondays is actually a slower day because they can't ship them over the weekend so easily to get them to us on time. But we are getting these now as part of this surveillance testing. We've been getting them since November 26th. And so we're getting hundreds and hundreds of samples coming in for testing. So.
Now, I've seen these stories of people that have gotten this thing, and you mentioned they're people that work at farms, dairy or chicken or whatever. Now, you work at a lab, okay?
Yeah.
Are you concerned that, hey, I'm in a lab, I'm testing this stuff, I could get it? Yeah. I mean, has that ever come up?
So, excellent question, and again, our laboratory and other laboratories like ours are set up with biosecurity practices in place just in case something like that happens. And so one of the things that we do is we have what we call biosafety cabinets. So they have HEPA filters on them. We wear gloves. We wear masks. We wear everything when we're working in those cabinets with things like this that might be a problem. One of the steps of the testing process is actually to kill any virus that's there. So at that point, it then becomes safer to handle without it being in a biosafety cabinet. But absolutely, safety and well-being of our employees is absolutely a top concern. And this is not the only one. There's other diseases that happen in goats and sheep and other animals as well that can cause disease in people. So we're always keeping that in mind. We get animals testing, being tested for rabies come in regularly. And again, we handle those with the proper biosecurity precautions so that we don't end up accidentally getting one of our folks sick, because that's a big concern for sure.
The testing process itself, is there a machine that just, hey, there's a virus here of some sort? Like, what is the process and what all can be picked up with the testing process?
So we were talking about the genetics right before that's the genomic testing. Well, there's a new technology relatively recently where the machine can look at the viruses in a sample or the genetic material of viruses in a sample and say, does this match this avian influenza virus that we know is out there? And so a lot of that is automated. There's still steps that the technicians have to go through to take that milk sample, prepare it, get the genetic material split up, ready for testing, and then it goes into a machine, and the machine checks to see if there's any copies of that genetic code or the DNA or the RNA in that sample to see if it's then considered positive. So it can detect a very, very, very low level of this genetic material in a sample, and that's the way it works. So a lot of it is automated, but obviously we have people that have to take, you know, go through those steps for the testing. So,
Are folks around the world dealing with this virus, or is it just us?
No, it is around the world, the avian influenza, so in poultry. In dairy cattle, it is unique that we haven't seen that in other parts of the world at this point. As far as I know, we get pretty regular reports, and we haven't seen that. So that is a concern for other countries. They don't want to necessarily import cows right now, especially if it comes from California. That would be considered very high risk, right? So other countries are continuously looking at what are the risks of importing cows or birds or dogs or cats or goats or sheep or anything like that.
Yeah.
So that's certainly something that's a concern. But the avian influenza has been around the world for decades and decades and decades in various forms and different permutations.
Now, again, not to freak people out, okay? Like I said, I had a glass of milk for breakfast this morning, and people are going to, oh, my gosh, I'm not going to drink milk ever again. Everything's fine.
Absolutely. So that's obviously one of the big questions that has to be answered, right? And very early on when this was discovered in dairy cattle, that was one of the first questions that CDC and a bunch of universities wanted to answer was, is there anything in the milk on the store shelves that is dangerous to people? And so you might have seen there were some stories to say, well, yeah, if we look, we can find small pieces of that genetic code in the milk on store shelves. And I think they found some in Ohio and other states as well. But that doesn't mean that it's a live virus. And so that's the question then, is there any live virus? Because a dead virus isn't going to hurt anybody.
Right.
But the question is there any live virus in the milk? And there's absolutely no evidence that there's any live virus. So pasteurization, which again, all this milk, well, 99.9% of the milk that you buy on the store shelves is going to be pasteurized. And so that is a process that was designed to kill any harmful bacteria or viruses that might be present in milk already many, 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 many decades ago, and has proven to be effective for this virus as well. So again, cows that are sick on a dairy farm, their milk does not go for sale. So that's one thing that has been a regulation for a long time. If a cow is sick, her milk should not be sold. But again, there is good evidence that the milk you buy and you drank this morning, you're absolutely fine drinking that. So.
Now, I've never done this, but raw milk, which I guess is straight out of the cow, what about that milk?
Well, so that would take almost another hour or two to talk about because the whole raw milk debate is a huge one.
We've got about 2 minutes.
It is a big one.
Yeah, so we won't get into that whole thing, but it is legal to sell raw milk in Pennsylvania. So there is a process by which dairy farmers can legally sell raw milk. At this point, we are not aware, and we've done testing now as well to say we don't think we have any of this in our dairy cows in Pennsylvania. So we feel pretty comfortable that the raw milk that is being sold does not have the virus in it. Now, in California, it's a completely different question, right? So if you're drinking raw milk in California, you're taking an unknown risk at this point. There's already some other risks that might be relatively minor, but there are some other risks. But this is one that we really don't know. So a lot of the raw milk advocates will say, hey, if it doesn't kill me, it'll make me stronger. You know, it's good. And there's probably some truth that over-sterilized food products are not necessarily the best thing for us, right? But I'm not sure at this point that I think drinking milk that we know has avian influenza virus in it is a good idea because we just don't know what it might do to people in that situation. But again, all the milk that you buy that is pasteurized is absolutely safe. And again, currently in Pennsylvania, we have no evidence that we have any of this virus in our dairy cattle. And so again, I think we're you know, in a good situation there as well.
Really quick, are there any other viruses out there? In about 10 seconds.
10 seconds? Yes. There's other viruses. There's always viruses in people as well as animals.
Yep.
And so that's definitely
okay. Welcome to life.
That's right.
Always a little bit of a risk. Thank you so much for the time.
Well,
very informative.
I really enjoyed the opportunity. And again, any other questions, I'm more than happy to.
If crazy things happen, let us know.
For sure.
We may bring you back. But Sandy's coming up.